listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Thanks for downloading the show, your weekly European football podcast. I'm Rob Daly, with me, Chris Parrott. Chris, hello.
Hello, Rob.
Chris, you abandoned me last Thursday. We were supposed to do a European football show on TalkSport together.
Very sorry about that. This sounds much more glamorous than it was, but I was called away to Switzerland. You know how it is, yeah.
Well, didn't you have to? You hung out with Christian Karrenbauer.
I did. Did a fantasy football show, which is going out this week. It was very fun. He said he liked my team. Watching him pick his fantasy team was priceless.
Why?
Well, first of all, we had to explain the concept, which is fair enough. But then he did that thing that footballers do because they know far more than we do. Instead of being like, oh, Aubameyang scored a million goals, I'm going to pick him. He was like, Aubameyang, yeah. And it was all tactics. So we looked at every single player. Probably took him about 2.5 hours.
No, it didn't, Chris.
But in fairness, he picked a darn good team at the end of it.
I suppose if you're like a technical advisor to Olympiakos,
yeah,
you can't just cobble together some fantasy team.
Exactly. You can't just pick your 11 players and then think, I've run out of money, who am I going to pick on the bench?
Thanks to everyone who got in touch to say nice things about us coming back, including Austin Long, Dan Moss, and Mr. Walker Porter, who said, first time listening, great pod, subscribed, and he enjoyed the good talk from know-it-all Archie.
I like that name, Walker Porter.
Yeah, what's your first name, Guy? Why so mysterious?
Maybe it's Guy.
Chris, you're at the Manchester Derby on Saturday.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It was a wonderful. We don't talk about the Premier League on the show much, but it was a wonderful game of football.
I've never known more subplots and narratives ahead of a game, and often they don't live up to the billing that this one did. It was, at the end, everyone, certainly in the press box, almost had that puffed out their cheeks, was like, oh, that was good.
Yeah.
City were exceptional for 40 minutes. And Claudio Bravo sort of made it a brilliant game because had he not done that, and generally just looked very shaky throughout, I don't think United would have been anywhere near as close to City. And then in the end, you felt that if United got the equaliser, they may well have gone on to win the game because City were brilliant, brilliant going forward. And I think they look pretty shaky defensively.
You were commentating inside the stadium, so were you keeping an eye, you know, the stuff that we can't see on the cameras, like the touchline stuff between Mourinho and Guardiola? What were they sort of like?
Well, there wasn't any interaction, really. It was very normal. They were both brilliant. There was a time when I think Fellaini gave it away and Mourinho just zipped round to his bench, pointed to Herrera and said, warm up now.
Really?
And, you know, so Herrera did, and he made a big difference when he came on. Guardiola was the same. But actually, for, you know, in the build-up to the game, it was all about their rivalry, which I think both coaches didn't mind because it took the pressure off their players completely. It was all about Mourinho and Guardiola, fine. And, you know, if you remember the Clasico games, the players didn't behave themselves. I don't think the coaches behaved themselves particularly well. This wasn't like that. All the talk was there, and hey presto, a football match broke out, which was the best thing about the game, I thought.
And we'll be talking about Claudio Bravo's former teammate, almost, Joe Hart, later on in the show, and about his blooper, similar to Bravo's from the weekend, but that's in part three. Coming up, we will be speaking to French football journalist Jonathan Johnson. Lots to talk to him about, especially PSG dropping point again, and Mario Balotelli winning a Man of the Match award and scoring a couple of goals for his new club, Nice. Chris, I want to introduce a new idea this week.
Okay.
So I was speaking to my mate David.
Always dangerous, though.
Yeah, I know. A little new feature. So he was chatting to a guy at work. David listens to the podcast, and he said he was sort of chatting about Lionel Messi and about penalties. And he said he had the information, the stats, to talk to this guy at work, Ruben, about Lionel Messi missing a load of penalties last season.
Yeah.
So it got me thinking, maybe we should have a little stats feature, a little facts feature, that means you can sort of get your way through a little pub chat, a little bit of European football chat, and we'll call them Rubens after the guy David chatted to.
Knowing your Rubens.
Knowing your Rubens. This week's Knowing Your Rubens.
We need to get Sting done. Or you can just do it.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm not singing something. I almost did then. So, Chris, I asked you to come up with a couple of stats or facts or anything you wanted for this feature. So, what's your Rubens this week?
I've got two. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Fenerbahce, 1 point from their first three games. Worst start to a season.
Okay.
They're in United's Europa League group.
Worst ever start to a season.
Worst ever start to a season. Barcelona, who we'll talk about. They lost to Alaves at the weekend. They are the first defending champion in Spain to lose to a newly promoted team since 2010.
Okay, not bad. I think I can do slightly better.
Oh, well, that's because you came up with the idea, so I only had 10 minutes to look at it.
Dinamo Zagreb, and thank you very much, actually, to... I forget who it was who tweeted in about this one. Dinamo Zagreb lost their first home league game at the Maximir in 103 matches.
Oh, that's good.
Last time they were beaten at home was back in 2010. The captain had to come out and apologise to the supporters after losing a home game. And my other one is to do with CSKA Moscow's new stadium, and we'll talk about this in a moment. There's a big skyscraper.
Oh, yeah.
Stuck in the corner of the brand new stadium, which they played their first game at the weekend. And it's actually in the shape of the UEFA Cup or the Europa League, because it was the first ever European trophy they won.
Yeah. First ever European trophy a Russian team won, I think.
Very possibly.
2005. I've out Ruben to Ruben, mate.
No, you've not. My Ruben's better than that.
No, I've just added to your Ruben.
Oh, you've added. It's a Ruben ad. So what we want is from listeners to send in their own Rubens, sort of major stats from the week. I quite like this from Jeff Waddle, who says he's flagged up the fact that Cammy Bell saved three penalties for Dundee United in a 3-1 win over Dunfermline at the weekend.
I think they were all in the first half as well.
Yeah, they were all in, and they went down to 10 men.
I mean, that is... You are walking into the dressing room like a king after that half time.
And you're not paying for a beer for about a month. So I want to talk about CSKA Moscow's new stadium. And we will talk about Barcelona. We're going to talk about the Bundesliga. We're going to talk about everything. But their new stadium's pretty cool, Chris.
Yeah.
I commentated on their game against Terek Grozny at the weekend. A 3-0 win for the defending Russian champions. Lassina Traore, who people may remember as the 6'8" giant who played Liverpool for Angie in the Europa League. Had a loan move to Everton. Didn't work out. He was injured the whole time. A couple of goals there. 10 years they've been waiting for that new stadium, CSKA Moscow.
And it's the football. I mean, Spartak have that new ground. The World Cup's in Russia in under 2 years now, isn't it? Looks brilliant. Zenit's new stadium's opening as well. Although the CSKA ground isn't hosting World Cup matches.
No, it's not.
They've already got two in Moscow. But it's going to be, like in France, I guess, actually like in every country, you know, you host a major championship and all of a sudden all these great new stadiums spring up. But yeah, Zenit won as well. I think Luchescu appears to be, all of a sudden his ideas are being implemented. And Axel Witsel, who must be about the most unfortunate man on transfer deadline day, I reckon. He was in Turin, he was going to
Juve. For his move to Juve, yeah.
To join a team who will discuss it, but they look very good this season, very good. And then, for whatever reason, it didn't come off. He seems to be linked away with a move from Zenit for about the last three transfer windows, but... In fairness to him, he gets on with it. He doesn't, you know, you don't see him coming out and slamming the club around and think he's back in Russia now. He'll be there at least until January, maybe until the summer. But yeah,
a year left on his contract, I think. I think his contract's up at the end of this season.
Maybe they just think, look, we'll have him and he might win us the title, get us back in the Champions League, and then that would basically
pay for itself.
Pay for itself.
Okay, let's talk about the Bundesliga, Chris. RB Leipzig. Evil.
Are we calling them RB?
That's their name, RB Leipzig. They're actually not Red Bull Leipzig. They beat Borussia Dortmund 1-0.
They did. Oliver Burke came off the bench, got an assist, the former Forest man.
It's a lovely assist, actually, for Naby Keita to score an 89th minute winner.
I think it'd be a great move. I know we heard from Archie last week, but I saw someone tweeting, which I enjoyed, as like, silly old Oliver Burke should have gone to Everton or Sunderland, shouldn't he?
And actually, I did see that.
Yeah, he's playing in front of packed houses every week. He's learning, I'm sure, new experience, new language, new culture. Good start for him. I've got a
theory. Oh, yeah, because Scotland aren't going to pick him because he's in Germany.
No.
I mean, it's a crazy idea that he has to stay in England or in the British Isles.
But when and if he leaves Leipzig now, it might be to, who knows, someone really big. And I've got a theory about Leipzig, though, this most hated club in Germany thing. I reckon everyone should get over it publicly. Because, okay, if you're as a group of people, you know, just think about it yourself. If everyone hates you, particularly in footballing or sporting terms, I don't think it makes you better.
It galvanises.
It galvanises. Just so I know quite a few AFC Wimbledon fans, and apart from when they're playing MK Dons, when they have a show of solidarity, they just totally ignore them. They refuse to accept that they exist. That is far more frustrating as a person, and I'm sure as a group of players, if people just ignore you instead of making a big song and dance about how bad you are. I think everyone should just, if they want to, and if they don't like them, just ignore them. Don't make them into some, you know, hated football club, because I think it will, you'll get egg in your face because they'll just up their level by 10% when they play.
Well, so certain people do think they'll be in the Champions League in a few years. If you want to, you know, worth reading up about RB Leipzig, the club effectively bankrolled by Red Bull. Elsewhere in the Bundesliga, oh, Mario Götze started at the weekend, by the way, for Dortmund, his first start since his return. Thomas Tuchel said his side made too many errors for Henry Ilnicki on Twitter. That was his highlight of the week. Bayern won 2-0 at Schalke on Friday. Two goals in the final 10 minutes. Lewandowski and Joshua Kimmich with his first for Bayern days after his first goal for Germany. Renato Sanchez did make his debut, but was replaced by Kimmich, who went on to score in the game.
Am I right in saying that Kimmich isn't playing at a centre-back now that Pep Guardiola's left?
No, but that, to be fair, that was because they had no centre-backs left. It was, Chris.
But it's also because he left his squad so short that they didn't
possibly
have any centre-backs.
Possibly.
Because Kimmich isn't a centre-back, as we saw in the Champions League.
No, he looks mighty good.
But no, exactly. He's a very, very good player. But yeah, they were caught a bit short.
Brian Sanders has tweeted in. I'm pretty sure Brian's tweeted this before, and he's an Eintracht Frankfurt fan. And he says, I hate to admit it, but Frankfurt losing 1-0 to Darmstadt in the Hessen derby, it was one of the highlights of the weekend. Sandro Siriga with the 90th minute winner, and it was a first victory for new coach Norbert Meyer. Lots of trouble always at that derby.
Yeah,
when those two sides are in the same league between Frankfurt and Darmstadt.
I wonder if it's because it's been a long time. Well, it was a long time coming last season before the first one, wasn't it? And that hatred summoned. How intensifies when you haven't met them for years and years.
Yeah, I mean, last year, the city of Darmstadt tried to legally ban Frankfurt fans from entering the city.
It's not going to happen.
No, it's not. Mainz drew 4-4 with Hoffenheim. Mainz were 4-1 up in that Sunday game. An incredible comeback. Saw Derek Ray, BT Sport commentator, tweeting about that one. And let's talk about Bayer Leverkusen, Chris. Really interesting story, because they were losing 1-0 to Hamburg at home before a hat-trick from a substitute, 21-year-old Finnish striker, Joel Pajan Palo. Going to have to get used to saying that name. Highlight of the week from Escape to Suomi and Mason Lemon on Twitter. Bobby Wood, the American international with his second for Hamburg, actually put them in front. So obviously we know Leverkusen is having this team with Javier Hernandez and Stefan Kiesling as their main strikers. So Chris, I set you the task of who on earth is Pajan Palo? Can you tell us a little bit about him?
Well, he's finished, first of all, which is a very hard...
I think he's just getting started.
I was going to...
Might cut that out.
Shall I call him the new Jari Litmanen? That's a little bit premature.
Yeah.
Maybe the new Chef Kikuchi. 21-year-old Finn. He's had two loan spells over the last 3 years. Fortuna Dusseldorf, second-tier team. Didn't really score many goals there. He is only the third Leverkusen player in their history, which I think says a lot about, although they've had some great strikers, but the third player to score in his first two games for the club. That's a Reuben in itself.
That is a Reuben.
I mean, that is, you would really expect plenty of their strikers to have done that over the history.
Absolutely.
But no, there was talk of him being loaned out again ahead of the season. They're pleased he wasn't. And
yeah, because you look at that goalscoring record and you say, well...
Yeah.
I mean, he says they changed coach four times during his time at Fortuna, and he never really settled at Fortuna Düsseldorf properly. But I would have thought, why would Roger Schmidt think this is a guy to play in the Bundesliga, to play in the top flight?
Oh, sometimes I think you see when people come back, Kiesling isn't getting any younger, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to give them a chance at some stage, don't you? Otherwise, you may as well sell them.
The striker himself says he can't put his incredible early season form into words. And I saw that Archie Rintat did tweet that one of the physios told Pajan Palo that he'd score a hat-trick. But apparently he did enough during pre-season in Austria to convince Roger Schmidt to make him part of the first team.
Well, he's definitely part of the first team now.
Yeah, four goals in his opening two games of the season. Okay, Chris, lots to talk about in French football, isn't there?
Yeah, more than normal.
More than normal. Let's speak to Jonathan Johnson.
This is Football in Europe, Liga Roundup.
Joining us now is ESPN FC and beIN Sports writer Jonathan Johnson. Jonathan, thanks for joining us on the show.
Hey there, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Jonathan, we were going to start with PSG, but Mario Balotelli has had some weekend. He scored a couple of goals in his first game for Nice. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. You know, made his debut for Nice against Marseille. Fantastic evening at Allianz Riviera, brilliant atmosphere. You know, things couldn't have gotten off to a better start for Balotelli, really. Penalty after, you know, inside of the first 10 minutes, that really boosted his confidence. Got himself a second goal, 12 minutes from time, and then the icing was added on the cake very, very late towards the game. Vinan Cyprian with a nice strike from range, but really it was, you know, it was Balotelli's evening. Still far from full fitness, I have to say, and you could see that in the way that he played, but he still had a big impact, and France have already fallen in love with this character. You know, no Zlatan Ibrahimovic in Ligue 1 anymore. Don't really want to say that Balotelli will be, you know, the new Zlatan for Ligue 1.
I think you are saying that, Jonathan.
He's going to be that kind of figure, I think, because there's going to be such media intrigue before every game, you know, then during the game what he's doing and then what he has to say afterwards. I'm sure you guys have seen, and if you haven't, then I urge you to check it out very quickly, the post-match interview with Balotelli on the treatment table afterwards. You know, it's just absolutely fantastic. You know, Ligue 1 really needed that sort of character to come in, and if Balotelli can live up to the standard that he set in his debut, once he gets, you know, up to full fitness, then, you know, I think that Nice are really going to have a very talented team on their hands, because it's not just Balotelli. You know, you look at the likes of Younes Belhanda as well, somebody who's won Ligue 1 in the past with Montpellier, and some of the other players who have been brought in as well. Cyprien, who scored the winning goal, a good player who I've rated for a long time while he was at Lens, finally getting to make the step up from Ligue 2 to Ligue 1 once again. You know, he got a taste of the top flight when he was playing for them, and they got relegated a couple of seasons ago, now back in Ligue 1. And you know, Lucien Favre, I think, is a fantastic replacement for Claude Puel. You know, has a very, very talented team on his hands, and I think that, you know, for Balotelli it was the perfect place to go. It's such a vibrant project there, so many good talented young players that have come through the academy, you know, a very well sourced talent from elsewhere that's been added there, you know, as well as Balotelli and Belhanda. The other big name to come in this summer was Dante, a player that Favre knows well from his time in the German Bundesliga, and I think that at the moment there's a really, really exciting project building there in Nice.
It's really interesting that you said about Ligue 1 having fallen in love with Balotelli, because I think in England certainly it's the opposite. People have fallen out of love. What's going on at Nice then? Because we saw last season with Ben Arfa, went there. I think people thought, okay, he's never going to fulfil his talent. He was brilliant, got the move to Paris Saint-Germain. You mentioned the project at Nice. Is part of that to get in maybe characters who have slightly gone wayward and try and get them back on the straight and narrow?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Nice are viewing themselves as at the moment, you know, as a place to regenerate, you know, fallen talents, players who, you know, have lost their way a little bit, you know, and who can thrive by coming into an environment that is, you know, perhaps less pressurized than a big club like, you know, in Balotelli's case, you know, Liverpool's or AC Milan's, those types of places. You know, I think they'll really thrive by being, you know, the center of attention in Ligue 1 every time Nice play, but not, you know, to the same level as when he was playing for, you know, an AC Milan or a Liverpool. And I think that being in this this environment would be good for him. You know, he is capable of dominating this league if he really decides to turn it on. You know, if he applies himself, he really could do a lot of damage this season. You know, I think that he could outscore Ben Arfa last season. Ben Arfa got close to 20 goals. So, I think that Balotelli could definitely get in, you know, 20 plus if he really puts his mind to it, especially when you consider the sort of ammunition he's going to be fed by the likes of Belhanda as well. And, you know, I think that it's a really interesting angle that Nice have decided to pursue with, you know, pairing their talented youngsters that come up through the youth academy with some of these players who have fantastic potential ability, who perhaps haven't quite fulfilled that yet. And when you look at the early season table and, you know, their joint top of the table with Monaco after four games with 10 points, you know, I don't think that qualification in one of the top three positions for the Champions League is beyond this Nice side.
And you mentioned the Mario Balotelli interview on the massage table. It is truly bizarre because Balotelli's there receiving what looks like post-match treatment, and a guy from, is it from Canal Plus?
Yeah.
Comes in and starts interviewing. What was that about? How did he get in?
Thank you. You are happy for your first match, two goals?
Huh?
Yeah. Sorry. two goals, two goals for your first match. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Your team, EC team, is a good team.
It's perfect.
That's it.
Yeah.
Yes, you're happy in France.
Yeah, of course.
Yes. You say un mot. You speak French. One more.
Hein?
Un mot, speak French. Je suis content. One word.
Je suis très content. Merci. Maintenant, massage.
Massage, ok. Tu veux que je masse moi?
Oh, Paganelli is just, yeah, he's one of those characters, you know, very investigative, always, you know, tries to
well, stick investigative and then
perhaps where he's not supposed to, and you know, gets these comic interviews every now and then. It's fantastic entertainment, and really I think it was the perfect way to end Balotelli's debut
was.
In France. You know, Marseille didn't look you know, as bad as you know, they perhaps have done earlier on this season. And okay, goalkeeping error perhaps for the winning Nice goal, but you know, it was just it was a lovely end to a fantastic evening and a very positive one for Ligue 1.
And you probably know that the Balotelli is always going to give you that interview as well, instead of some players who would just push you away.
But I think the fact that he looked so bemused as to why he was being interviewed on the treatment table was just fantastic, and the fact that the reporter was trying to give him the man of the match award as well.
Indeed. So things going well for Nice and Balotelli. Paris Saint-Germain, though, won every major trophy available domestically in each of the last two seasons, is it? They're supposed to win every week, aren't they? But they're not under Unai Emery. How come?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a difficult start to the season for PSG, but it's been difficult for a number of reasons. I mean, one of the most obvious reasons, you know, life after Zlatan Ibrahimovic, it was always going to be difficult, you know, and it's proving to be so far. On top of that, you know, you've got Unai Emery coming in, a coach who, you know, doesn't speak French fluently, although his French is very impressive, I will say, considering that he's only been in the country for a couple of months. But he's still trying to get his ideas across to the players. That's going to take some time. And also the other thing for PSG is that they are missing a lot of players still. Unfortunately for them, you know, when you are a club like PSG, you have a lot of players who are involved in international tournaments. And this summer just gone, you know, PSG had a lot of players involved at Euro 2016. You know, they had representatives that then went to play in the Olympics as well. So, you know, they haven't yet got their squad back, you know, and had a full complement of players who are fully fit as well. It's been a battle for Emery to bring his key players up to full fitness. You know, Marco Verratti has been with PSG for the whole of pre-season, yet he didn't really start featuring for PSG until the, you know, the first couple of games of the Ligue 1 season. Didn't really get to feature that much in pre-season because he was coming off of you know, a groin surgery from an injury that really ruined his last campaign. So, you know, PSG are having to exercise caution with certain injured members of the squad. Thiago Silva as well injured his hip during the International Champions Cup and will probably only make his first appearance of the season against Arsenal in the Champions League. So far from ideal preparation for PSG going into that Champions League match, under a little bit of pressure going into it, of course. But at the same time, you know, I think that people should remind themselves that Carlo Ancelotti didn't make a fantastic start to his PSG career, and neither did Laurent Blanc. So I definitely think that Unai Emery needs to be given a bit of time. But a positive result against Arsenal and then another positive result this Friday against Caen would, you know, would really ease a bit of this early pressure on him.
And he comes up against Arsene Wenger, Unai Emery.
You know, the one that got away, as it were, for PSG. It'll be very, very interesting how this match is viewed in France. Plenty of Arsenal fans in the country, obviously, because of Wenger's influence at the club over the years. Plenty of interest as well in Paris because, like you said, Wenger, somebody that PSG have approached in the past. They ideally wanted him to lead the project as soon as they took over. Couldn't get him, so they got Ancelotti instead. Tried again a couple of times and failed each time. So I think, you know, they've now accepted that they'll never be able to get Wenger to lead the project. You know, they might be able to get him in a sporting director capacity at some point, but they're not going to be able to get him in as coach. So I think that, you know, they're perhaps going to want to try and show him, you know, what he's missing, although I don't think it's perhaps the best time for them to be trying to do that. And I have to say, I think that it would be a positive result for PSG if they can get a draw.
Interesting. Another man who, well, Wenger's been linked to actually is Lacazette. He's back and scoring goals. How's he started, and how have Lyon started? Do you think maybe along with Nice and Monaco, who we'll speak about in a moment, do you think they can push Paris Saint-Germain in a proper title race?
I think they have the potential to be able to push PSG in a title race. However, I think they're far from being able to do that at the moment. There are big question marks over this Lyon side. Lacazette's not one of those question marks, or at least Lacazette's goal scoring ability is not one of those question marks. He scored 6 goals so far in 4 matches. However, the big problem with Lacazette at the moment seems to be his physical state. He's picked up a couple of injuries already there so far this season, picked up one recently in the 3-1 loss at home to Bordeaux, and is now going to be out for a couple of weeks. So he's going to miss their first Champions League match. And I wrote about this earlier on in the summer. Lyon strengthened or replaced some of the players that they lost, notably Samuel Umtiti, relatively well by bringing in Nicolai Nkoulou on a free transfer. And Mamana from River Plate as well for a relatively low fee. But other than that, I wasn't very impressed by Lyon's transfer business over the summer. I still think that they lack a lot in squad depth. And I think that a lot of the emphasis in that Lyon team is on Lacazette, which puts him under a lot of pressure. So when he gets injured like he is now, I think it's very difficult to see where those goals are going to come from for Lyon. Nabil Fekir still not back to his best. Back from injury, of course, so that's a big boost for Lyon. Didn't have him for the majority of last season after he picked up an injury on international duty last September. But he is, he's not quite back at the level of brilliance that we saw from him a couple of seasons ago, and without him being back at that level, it's very, very difficult for Lyon to be able to cope when Lacazette's out injured. So, I think they'll be hoping that it's just going to be a couple of weeks, sort of like 2-3 weeks maximum, that they're going to be without him, because if it's more than that, then I worry about their ability to challenge PSG for the title long term. But that said, PSG also have to prove at the moment that they're going to be able to be consistent enough domestically, because Unai Emery, as much as he has enjoyed success in Europe in the Europa League, he's a coach who is not synonymous with domestic success. His first domestic trophy, in fact, was the Trophée de Champion with PSG last month. So I think at the moment you have to make them early favourites, but Monaco look like they are going to be the biggest threat to PSG's domestic dominance.
Why is that? Because Rich Allen's tweeted in with his highlights of the week, Jonathan, to say PSG and Lyon are stuttering. Balotelli made Bafétimbi Gomis look foolish after the wind-up ahead of his penalty at the weekend. But he says that Monaco are looking great, and that'll be interesting for Tottenham fans, because obviously they're paired in that Champions League group with them.
Yeah, I don't think it's any coincidence that Monaco are looking very good this season, considering that they haven't sold half of their squad over the summer. That's always been one of the problems at Monaco, that the project relies on them selling their best talents year on year and then replacing them with cheaper players who have fantastic potential that they can then raise up and then sell on in the summers to come. Monaco have actually managed to keep some of their better players so far this season. And you look at the squad that they have at the moment, the likes of Bernardo Silva still there, Fabinho still there, Raul Moutinho, although he's never really lived up to his ability and the price tag that the Monaco initially paid for him, he's also been quite good so far this season. Monaco also have some very talented youngsters there. I'm thinking of the likes of Thomas Lemar, who Atletico Madrid really wanted over the summer. Kylian Mbappe as well, very, very talented young player. But there's also been some sensible transfer business there, bringing Valergerman back from on loan at Nice and actually deciding to keep him. Radamel Falcao as well, who's returned and before he got injured looked relatively sharp and as if he was ready to sort of lead this team once again and score between 10 and 20 goals as he's expected to. So I think that those things have made a big difference for Monaco so far this season. And also I think that it's important as well that Jardim has had a bit of continuity with this squad, because he's a very good tactician. He might not be the most attack minded of coaches, but I think he showed in that 3-1 win over PSG just before the international break that he can out-tactic pretty much anybody in this league. Unai Emery's team selection perhaps wasn't the best, but Jardim's ability to identify Levin Kazawa as the main threat in that PSG team. Of course, a player that he knows well from his time at Monaco before he moved to PSG, completely took him out of the match, kind of just showed for me exactly why Monaco are going to be PSG's toughest challengers for the title this season, because I expect them to be more consistent across Ligue 1 and the Champions League than Lyon, because, you know, in my opinion, outside of PSG, Monaco have probably the best squad depth.
Jonathan, very interesting. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast again, mate. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on, guys. It's been a pleasure.
For more, head to the website, footballineurope.co.uk.
Chris, it's time for the final part of the show.
Part three.
There was something I forgot to mention in part one, and that was this Ado Den Haag story in the Eredivisie. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what happened in the Netherlands at the weekend?
Very, very nice. In Rotterdam, the Den Haag fans threw loads of cuddly toys over the top into the fine odds section, where there were a group of children from a local hospital.
The video of that is so great, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's just like, you know, like, I don't know, hundreds and hundreds of teddies being thrown around the stadium. But nice as well, you know, it's a very, very intimidating place, you know, Feyenoord's home ground. But the whole ground then applauded them. It's lovely to see.
And Feyenoord doing pretty well. They're preparing to face Manchester United in the Europa League.
They are. 5 wins from 5. They haven't won the title since the late 90s.
Wow.
And from memory, started last season well and then totally fell apart, and it became Ajax against PSV. But yeah, Dirk Kuyt, who will be looking forward to playing Manchester United, I am sure.
In great form, apparently.
Yeah, in great form. And they're just ahead of PSV, who have started the season well too. Ajax, of course, lost Frank de Boer in the summer, him going to Inter. Haven't started as well, but PSV plays Atletico in the Champions League. So let's hope it's better than last season, because those two knockout games between the two, was it the first ever Champions League knockout tie that finished 0-0 on aggregate?
Yes, yeah.
And they could be playing now, and I think it still would have finished 0-0 on aggregate. Atletico eventually going through on penalties.
Well, let's hope for a goal, eh?
Yeah, let's hope for a goal, yeah.
Well, Austin Long tweeted in to say last week he really enjoyed our quick fire section, even though it was really not quick fire. We tried.
Shall we try and make this quick
fire? No, we definitely are. Because you've mentioned Atletico, so that brings us nicely into La Liga. Barcelona beaten at home by Deportivo Alaves.
Yes, Alaves. Remember them? UEFA Cup final. This isn't quickfire. I'm digressing already. Yeah, they were.
Once upon a time, I was a young boy.
And Gary McAllister swung in a free kick. Luis Enrique left Messi, Suarez, Iniesta on the bench. Have to say it backfired. Ended a run of 8 straight Liga wins. Messi and Suarez did come on. Wasn't enough. So they've lost their 100% start. Who knows? Real Madrid are absolutely flying. They won. Scored five nil up after 62 minutes. And just to go back to last season and this season now, it's 15 straight La Liga wins for Zinedine Zidane. And a certain Cristiano Ronaldo was back for the first time since his summer heroics for Portugal. Scored after 6 minutes. He'll be looking forward to playing his first club Sporting again in the Champions League. And have you seen his rant? We'll call it a rant. About after some comments Xavi made.
No, I've not seen this. What is it?
It's quite good. I'm just going to have to get my phone out to...
Okay, well, while you do that, I'm just going to make a couple more points. So we'll come back to Ronaldo's Xavi rant in a moment. Worth noting that Barcelona did start with Paco Alcácer and Jesper Cillessen.
Yes.
Marc-André Ter Stegen was injured at the weekend. Ibai Gomez, lovely little slide finish for the winner. I think he's the old Athletic Bilbao guy, isn't he? Ibai Gomez?
I think he is, because they're another Barcelona.
Ah, there we go. Yeah, there we go. La Liga Gav tweeted in to say that Barcelona's loss is the story of the weekend in European football. And Gav also says it shows how strong the league has become. Simon Harrison also tweeted us to say that was a very special result. Have you found the Ronaldo rant?
I have, yes.
Go on.
I don't know if it's a rant, but it's quite funny. So Xavi did an interview, the great Xavi, and basically said Ronaldo is an elite player, but he's unfortunate to... be playing in the same era as Lionel Messi. I think Ronaldo took that to suggest that Messi is better than him.
Which is what it meant.
I mean, yes, it is what it meant. He might be true, but it's the same case for Messi as well, I think.
Yeah.
But who knows how good either would be if the other one didn't exist. But here's what he said. The most searched for player on the internet is me. Those that want to appear on front covers or promote things speak about me. What does it matter to me what Xavi says? I really like this. He plays where? In Qatar or somewhere. I don't know.
He's sort of got a little point at the end there,
isn't
he? He's
got a really good point. He's won everything, but he's never won a Ballon d'Or. I have three.
Whew, fair enough, Ronnie.
It's a great response. I mean, there's, you know, we deal now in sound, in, you know, very plain interviews where nobody wants to upset anybody.
No, Ronaldo says what he wants.
He's
now,
great,
doesn't
Ronaldo,
he?
Yeah.
Atletico found a victory, Chris. They beat Celta 4-0 away, much needed ahead of the Champions League started. They didn't win their opening two.
No, and that one of those actually was against Alaves. So they've already played Atletico and Barcelona and they got four points. Amazing for the newly promoted side. Griezmann got two and an assist. I did wonder whether he might not start the season as explosively as he ended. You know, he played an awful lot of football, Champions League and then Euro 2016. But important goals for him. They'll be there or thereabouts, won't they? It's just you know, if Real Madrid keep on winning every week, it's going to be very interesting.
Three losses in a row for Celta Vigo seem to be filling the loss of Nolito. And Valencia have lost all three.
Yeah, Valencia have lost all three.
Jeez.
That hasn't gone down well, as you can imagine.
Serie A, Chris. We've got to talk about Joe Hart now.
Or John Hart.
Yes. Why are you saying John Hart?
Well, it's on the team sheet as John Hart, which is...
That is criminal, isn't it?
Well, but then it got me thinking, I bet loads and loads of foreign players in the Premier League have there's been misspelled
I know,
names.
But I'm not going to put George Buffon on the team sheet if he comes over here.
It is quite funny, though. And all in all, it was a disappointing day.
I mean, his mistake, he came for a cross from a corner and sort of palmed it straight to Andrea Masiello.
Yeah.
It was actually really similar in terms of the finish to the Ibrahimovic Bravo incident.
Yeah, I mean, for both of them, if that happens 10 times in the season, which they'll hope it doesn't, but if it does, only half of them probably lead to goals, but it just so happens on their debuts that it did.
Yes.
I mean, Sinisa Mihailovic was a, you know, he knows. You know, the thing is with goalkeepers, if they do make an error and it leads almost always directly to a goal.
Funny, Mihailovic and Guardiola dealt with it very differently. Mihailovic had acknowledged that Hart had made a mistake, but he says, I'm not going to have a go at one of my players for making a mistake. I have a go at them if they don't stick to the plan that we had for the game. Whereas Guardiola was almost overly complimentary, it felt, of Joe Hart.
Well, I mean, he was.
Of Claudio Bravo, sorry.
Yeah, certainly not of Joe Hart. he said he had a great game.
I think it's with goalkeepers, coaches are so worried about killing their confidence, aren't they?
They are. But I mean, last season he said Benfica have the best defence in the world. They don't. They have a good defence. They don't have the best defence in the world. And Claudio Bravo didn't have a good game. It's, you know, patently obvious.
Gonzalo Higuain did have a good game at the weekend.
He did.
Against Sassuolo. Tell me about it, Chris.
Well, it's 3-3 now for the most expensive South American of all time. He's brilliant. He scored two.
That stunning volley.
One of them. Brilliant. It's on the penalty spot, and it's not quite a scissor kick because he manages to get over it so well, so it becomes a volley.
It reminds me of, do you remember Lewandowski's best goal from the five he scored against Wolfsburg?
Yeah.
Where it was sort of angled volley into the top corner. Stunning from Higuain.
Yeah, brilliant. He scored another one, and he set up Miralem Pjanic for the other one of Juve's three goals.
There's your money. There's all your money, isn't
there's
it?
Your money. And as we've said, it's 3-3 for Juve in terms of wins now in Serie A. 2 points ahead of Napoli and Roma. But, you know, Paolo Dybala says he thinks they're up there with Europe's best. And we will find out this week. They host Sevilla. But we said last week, I really think they have the squad, definitely, too. And I think they have the coach in Max Allegri. To really go deep in the Champions League. They're definitely one of the contenders.
That's the side they've made signings for that very reason. Let's talk about Roma briefly. Francesco Totti still at it.
He is. Last-minute penalty to complete the comeback win. Mo Salah had put them ahead. Sampdoria scored two. Edin Dzeko equalised. Totti. And you just knew nobody was taking that penalty apart from Francesco Totti when they got it. Still scoring there. There, of course, that big disappointment of not getting through the Champions League playoffs, lost to Porto, so they're in the Europa League.
Humiliating fashion it was, isn't it?
I think for Italian football as well, again, not to have three teams.
You're going to have four guaranteed in the group stage very soon.
They are going to have four guaranteed. They've only got two. They've only had two for,
a while,
A while. And again, they've started well, though, under Spalletti. Napoli have started as well. They beat, they're impressive at the weekend, one. And, Champions League action away to Dynamo Kiev. Interesting to see how Napoli go in the Champions League this season.
Yeah, Napoli 3-0 winners away at Palermo. Arkadiusz Milik on the score sheet again. So Totti's still at it, Higuain's still at it, and so are Palermo in terms of changing manager. Because since the last show, Palermo have changed manager again.
Yes, Davide Ballardini has resigned. They had 8 managerial changes last season.
You're even pressing your own fingers into your temple as you say this.
I just almost think I wonder.
How many managerial changes last season for Palermo?
Well, they had 8, which just makes you, just makes you suggest that they never really had a manager full stop.
So, yes, yeah.
Yeah, good old Palermo. I mean, imagine that you definitely go in with, you know, wanting some sort of payoff if you get appointed manager. Let's just say you wouldn't buy a house in Sicily, would you? You definitely
no, rent. You're renting. Let's talk about Champions League, Europa League now. We've already talked about Manchester United facing Feyenoord in the Europa League. Marcus Rashford confirmed to start by Jose Mourinho. Champions League, Celtic. We saw the Old Firm return at the weekend with a comprehensive 5-1 win over Rangers for Brendan Rodgers' side. But they take on a Barcelona side who lost at the weekend.
Yeah, they did. But who hit 6 past them when they were last in the group stage in 2013. That group, I mean...
Do you feel for Brendan Rodgers a little bit, Chris? Yeah. City and Gladbach.
Yeah, well, I mean, I actually feel very sorry for Rodgers. I feel sorry for Gladbach because I think in any other group you'd probably put them in the top 2. I think they're going to have a good season, but for City and Barcelona not to go through would be a huge story.
I mean,
that is a really, really tough group. But what Celtic do have is they have 3 brilliant nights at Celtic Park against 3 big teams. That was Brendan Rodgers' first task, was to make sure they qualified. They almost didn't. Hapoel Beersheva came roaring
back in
Israel.
Gave him a scare, yeah.
But yeah, it's going to be hard. But I think he, you know, he signed. And Moussa Dembele, a lot of people wanted him.
Wonderful hat-trick. Wonderful hat-trick.
You know, so, you know, great start for him. And, you know... I think because of some of his mannerisms, and when you're Liverpool coach, you seem to have to speak to the press every day. You know, it got some of the things he said. You know, the David Brent.
I think he'll. I think he'll learn his. He's already said a couple of things where you're like, he's Brendan. But
look, as a coach, you know, and everyone can always say, oh yeah, but he had Suarez and Sturridge, but he almost won Liverpool the title. He did a brilliant job at Swansea. I'm very happy to see him back, and I think he'll do a good job at Celtic. And I think after that, it'll be very interesting to see where Brendan Rodgers goes.
Leicester City begin their Champions League life this week.
As if you're saying it.
I know.
It's great, isn't it?
So Club Brugge. We love Brugge on this show, do we? Or should Leicester expect to pick up a victory? A very easier group than they could have got.
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone will think the same about Leicester, no offence. They're a pot one team. So if you're looking for progression, you probably wanted to draw Leicester.
Porto are happy. Club Brugge are probably happy.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to see how they go. It's a fantastic away trip, Bruges. I couldn't have asked for a better one.
And how are they doing? I mean, is this a case? Because Leicester got beat 4-1 by Liverpool at the weekend.
Not particularly well. They're 10th in Belgium. 2 wins from 6 games.
Okay.
Well off the pace. I mean, I think when the Champions League comes around, it's different. But I think all four... Porto and Leicester are probably favourites, but, you know, all of a sudden Copenhagen and Bruges are thinking, hey, you know, we can go through. And we saw a Belgium team last season in Ghent do very well in the Champions League. So Club Brugge, you know, they'll be happy with the section, and your microphone's fallen down.
Yeah,
you're holding it like an ice cream
cone. Shows are right at the end of the show. So let's not forget the Southampton are in European competition. Europa League, Sparta Prague.
Yeah.
Tell me.
Drew at the weekend against Mladá Boleslav, and they are second.
Love the way you said that.
In the Czech top league.
Excellent. Is that everyone? Are we done and dusted? Manchester City? Have we done City?
Well, we did them in the derby, yeah.
I suppose.
They look brilliant, but they're going to have to shore up at the back.
They are indeed, as they take on Gladbach.
Gladbach,
looking great.
That's a really good game.
Yeah, great game. Okay, Chris, we're done.
We are.
Was that quick fire enough, do you think? Austin Long tweet us to let us know if that was quick fire enough.
Felt like it started and then we rambled off.
Yeah. Always the way.
Always got a plan, though. We always come back, and eventually it's the end of the show.
I'll tell you what, mate, you're not wrong there. Leave us a review on iTunes, please. Please leave us a review. And everyone stayed. But our subscribers stayed, Chris.
Did they?
Yeah.
Even after the extended break.
People didn't leave us. Thank you so much to everyone for downloading. Leave us a review on iTunes. It helps us get up the charts. Also, we want your Rubens for next week. So yeah. Your best facts and stats, yeah, Chris?
What is it? Knowing your Rubens.
Knowing your Rubens. Get them into us next week. We'll see you on Monday.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews, and special features.